Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON BPT Founder Acharya Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Buddhika Acharya Ashtotar Tadashri Srimad Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai. Nama Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Kuntara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhaktivinda Ki Jai. All glory to the assembled devotees. All glory to the assembled devotees. All glory to the assembled devotees. All glory to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jai Mudiriyet. Before reciting this Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, we should offer our respectful obeisances unto Lord Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unto Nara Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, unto Srila Vyasadev, the author, and unto Srila Prabhupada, the translator, commentator, and our spiritual master. Nashtaprayesha Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavatyuttama Shloke Bhaktim Bhavati Naishtiki. By regular attendance in classes on Srimad Bhagavatam and by rendering devotional service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is destroyed almost to nil. And loving devotion to the Supreme Lord, who is glorified in the best of songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Canto 4, Chapter 24, Chanting the Song Sung by Lord Shiva, text number 55. Tam Duraradhyam Aradhya Satam Api Durapaya Ekanta Bhaktya Ko Vanchet Padamulam Vina Bahi Tung-dura-radhyam-aradhya Satam-api-durapyaya Ekanta-bhaktya-ko-vanchit Padamulam-vinabahi Tung-dura-radhyam-aradhya Satam-api-durapyaya Ekanta bhaktya ko vanchit Padamulam vinabahi Tangdara radhyam aradhya Satam api durapaya Ekanta bhaktya ko vanchit Padamulam vinabahi.
Namaste.
Tandararaj Maharaj. Ladies. Tandra Maharaj Maharaj. Anyone else? No. Tam unto you. Dorarajam. Very difficult to worship. Aradhya. Having worshipped. Satamapi. Even for the most exalted persons. Dorapaya. Very difficult to attain. Ekanta bhaktya, by devotional service. I'm sorry, did I say ekanta bhaktya? Ekanta, pure. Bhaktya, by devotional service. Ka, who is that man? Vanchit, should desire. Padamulam, lotus feet. Vina, without. Bahi, outsiders. Translation. My dear Lord, pure devotional service is even difficult for liberated persons to discharge, but devotional service alone can satisfy you. Who will take to other processes of self-realization if he is actually serious about the perfection of life? Please repeat. My dear Lord, pure devotional service is even difficult for liberated persons to discharge. But devotional service alone can satisfy you. Who will take to other processes of self-realization if he is actually serious about the perfection of life? Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word satam refers to transcendentalists. There are three kinds of transcendentalists, the jnani, the yogi, and the bhakta. Out of these three, the bhakta is selected as the most suitable candidate to approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is emphasized herein that only one who is outside devotional service would not engage in searching for the lotus feet of the Lord. Foolish people sometimes maintain that God may be attained in any way, either by karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, etc. But here it is clearly stated that it is impossible to obtain the mercy of the Lord by any means but bhakti yoga. The word dararaja is especially significant. It is very difficult to attain the lotus feet of the Lord by any method other than bhakti yoga. Om jnana timarandasya jnananjana shalakaya. Chakshu unmitam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and to all members of the Sri Parampara. So these are the middle of the wonderful song of Lord Shiva being taught to the Prachetas before they undergo severe austerities underwater for 10,000 years, and they chant this mantra. This mantra is many verses long for self-realization, and they do indeed achieve it. So here in this verse, a very important point is made, as it is made in many places throughout our Shastra, and that is that Krishna, our God, the ultimate truth, is attainable only through devotional service. Now, this verse begins with an interesting statement, tam dararadya aradyam, that it is difficult to worship Krishna. It's not easy to come to the conclusion to worship the Supreme Personality of God in a humble state of mind. And the reason for that is that even though there are other transcendentalists, as mentioned here, the jnani and the yogi, as well as the bhakta, the central fact
of the living entity in this material world is this sense of false ego, meaning that we have this conception of separation from the Lord. Ahankar literally means I am the doer, implying I am also the enjoyer and the owner. And it is for this reason that we are here in this material world. So this general mood also pervades other systems of transcendence. If one is not does not have the blessing of getting the mercy of a pure devotee of the Lord, then one may come in contact with a line of jnanis, a line of yogis, impersonalists or whatever, and one's impetus toward transcendence will be tinged with that mood of self-aggrandizement. And so for the jnanis, generally they are interested in liberation or mukti. But because they are averse to the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, their intelligence is not pure, as it is said famously by Srila Prabhupada, yenye, quoting the demigods praying to Krishna in the womb, yenye adavindaksha vamuktamanyanas trayashtabhavad avishuddha buddhya aruha kuchena padang padang tata patam chadho anadita yushmarangaya. That besides the bhaktas, ye anye, there are others, O lotus-eyed Lord, they're saying, lotus-navelled Lord, lotus-eyed Lord, and lotus-navelled Lord, both, whose intelligence is impure, avishuddha buddhaya. And the evidence of that is that they're averse to worshipping your lotus feet. So what is their practice? Some great austerity, kritrena, indicates some great austerity, in order to detach the mind from the objects of the senses. Both the impersonalists and the bhaktas understand that it is the knots in the heart, the accumulated desires for many, many births that keep us bound to this world, keep us bound to this world of matter, and therefore suffering birth, death, old age, and disease repeatedly. So we share that with the jnanis, this desire, basic desire, to get out of this material world. So their method, since they are averse to serving the lotus feet of the Lord, they must perform some severe austerity in order to forcibly detach the mind and the senses from the objects of the senses. Now try to imagine what it's like if we didn't have the holy name, if we didn't have the deities, if we didn't have the prasadam, if we didn't have the leela, if we didn't have the beautiful Radha-Damodar mantra, all of the things which help us to, which draw the mind to think about Krishna and love Krishna. If we didn't have any of that, all we had was the understanding that we're spirit and that we have to get it detached from Maya. We have to get detached from matter. So it's completely a process of repression, isn't it? Krishna says in the Gita, what will repression accomplish? And in this, so the mind has to be detached. So it's a question of severe austerity, literally tyaga, giving up those things, even in relationship to the Lord. Rupa Goswami explains that this kind of tyag, or vairagya, is pulgu. Pulgu means very weak. It can be easily lost. And why? Because even the things in relationship to Krishna are renounced as material. Oh, they have a form. They have a fragrance. They have a leela. All of that is activities. That must be maya, you see. So because of this impure intelligence, even though a few may rise up to the platform of spirit, parampadam, it's called the supreme place, or situation of Brahman. Parampadam patantyadho, they fall down again because they are averse to serving his Krishna's lotus feet. So this is an important verse for understanding the bankruptcy of jnana devoid of bhakti. Jnana can be subordinate to bhakti, and indeed can support it. We know there's so much jnana that we're meant to understand. Krishna has a whole section in the 13th chapter about what is real jnana. But jnana simply in the service of liberation, rather than in the service of bhakti or devotion, is ultimately empty. And therefore, we have this other famous verse from Lord Brahma, which Srila Prabhupada would quote all the time, these prayers in the 14th chapter, where Brahma, who is after all Vidhi, he is the knower of all the Vedas, he is so intelligent, but he wasn't intelligent enough to see that this little child, with the yogurt in his hand, playing with his cowherd friends and the calves, was actually his father, Narayan. that he was actually God. And so he was covered by Krishna, Brahma Vimohan Leela. And after he was covered, and we know the story, eventually he saw by revelation that Krishna was indeed the Supreme Personality of God. And he offered these prayers, which are very conclusive, chapter 14, they're worth studying. And in there he speaks also about Gyan. He says, Gyane priyasam udapasya namantaheva jivandisan mukaditam bhavadiyavartam stane stitak shutigatam tanuvan manobhir jayprayaso ajitajito pasitais trilokyam. So here, he tried to conquer Krishna, isn't it? He tried to conquer Krishna by stealing his calves, stealing his boys, but he was defeated. But here he gives the formula by how one can conquer Krishna. He says, ajita jita, here. So the first thing is one has to give up, cast far away one's great efforts for this impersonal jnana, for jnana devoid of bhakti, devoid of knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He uses the word udapasya, means to really cast it away without any chance of taking it up again. And one then has to offer one's obeisance, one has to be very humble, and live in such a way that one is always hearing and absorbed in the accounts of Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes emanating from the mouths of the pure devotees. This is a very key word here, san mukaritam. San refers to sat, as we say every morning, sadbi, the saints, the sadhus, the devotees, the mahatmas. From their mouth is emanating these vibrations. This book has come from the mouth of Srila Prabhupada. How did he create these books? He spoke all these books. I wrote some of them, spoke them all. It's the same idea. But they have come from the mouth of the pure devotee. And they are what we should absorb our mind in. This is what he says, and offer our obeisance to. Now, how do we do that? Stane sita. You don't have to change your position. It's not something where you have to go somewhere else, do something else besides this. Stay, if you're a householder, stay a householder. If you're a woman, man, old, young, it doesn't matter. Stay in your position, but shutigatam, follow this path of hearing. And how to do it? Tanuvan manobhir. Very key phrase. With one's body, one's words, and one's mind. In other words, with one's senses, one has to carry out the instructions of the Shastra. With one's words, one has to repeat the words of the Shastra. And with one's mind, one should contemplate and think about the words of the Shastra, which have emanated from the lips of the pure devotee. And in this way, one can, ajita jita, one can conquer the unconquerable Lord, and it's the only way in all three worlds to do that. So how can one conquer the Lord? Here we see Mother Yashoda. She conquered Krishna. She tied him up. How? With her ropes of love. That's the only way that Krishna can be controlled. And he agrees to be controlled that way because this is what he loves more than anything. He hides his great opulence and his power just so that devotees like Mother Yashoda can see him as a helpless little child, a naughty little child, and tie him up with these ropes. He likes that because this is an intimate relationship that is the sweetest thing. And he says the same thing in the 11th canto. This is also supporting this principle. Nasadi yati mam yogo. He's speaking here to Uddhava. Nasankyam dharma Uddhava. Nasvadhyayas tapastyago yata bhakti mamojita. My dear Uddhava, the unalloyed devotional service rendered by my pure devotees brings me under their control. I cannot be thus controlled or by those engaged in mystic yoga, Sankhya philosophy, pious work, Vedic study, austerity or renunciation or anything else. So Krishna is responsive to our devotion, and only that. That is what he is attracted to. That is what attracts him. So our whole process of bhakti yoga, sadhana bhakti, is meant to awaken, to revive that original devotional attitude and mood that is in our heart, that's been buried and corrupted by millions of births of forgetting Krishna and engaging in sense gratification. The rasa, it may be a polluted rasa, but we call it a rasa, the relationship, the mellow, of material mellow, if you will, that we enjoy through a contact of the senses with the sense objects, is nothing but that original ladini shakti in contact with the modes of nature. And so the process of bhakti is a process of refining our consciousness. Just like if we find some gold, if you dig up some gold, this analogy is given by Krishna in Uddhava Gita also. You take some gold, it may be mixed with so many impurities, isn't it? So you have to smelt it. You have to melt out the gold, melt away the impurities, and eventually you have pure gold. Same thing with a diamond, right? It's a diamond in the rough. It's in, you know, you have to refine it so that it's shining beautifully. So our heart is the same way. It's been covered by all of these impurities. And therefore, the original love for Krishna cannot shine forth. So our process, beginning with hearing and chanting, is for awakening this original love for Krishna. And it's the only way to come to know the Lord, the only way to come to that Krishna will reveal himself. So what about the yogis? So there are three transcendentalists here, the jnanis, the yogis, and the bhaktas. So the yogis, many, many yogis, they're also tinged with this selfish mood. And indeed, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu classifies them amongst the kamis. Not the communists, but the kamis means those who are desirous of material things. It says, bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakala ashanta. Krishna bhakta nishkama ata eva shanta. Right? There's this desire for peace. I read, what did I read yesterday? Like 48% of the people in America can't sleep at night. You know, Prabhupada talks about that. Is that all day they're thinking, you know, trying to make money and warding off the material world, and at night disturbed by so many thoughts, so many anxieties, fears, and people, you know, they need so many drugs. 48% of the people can't sleep at night. That means that they're not peaceful. They're far from peaceful. So peace of mind, which is certainly the first peace that counts, is a great treasure. Now here, Krishna, Lord Chaitanya gives a simple formula. Krishna also gives it in the second chapter. There's several sections about peace in the Bhagavad Gita. But he says here, he contrasts the devotees to the bhukti mukti siddhi kamis, those who desire bhukti, gross sense gratification, 99.9% of the people. Then, but there's also the mukti kamis. This is also a kind of lust. It's a kind of material desire. Just to desire liberation. There's nothing spiritual about it because it's selfish. And also the siddhi kamis, those who desire perfections such as anima, siddhi, becoming smaller than the smallest, greater than the greatest, lighter, to be able to reach your hand out and attain anything you want. Can you imagine? There's millions of people in this country who are playing the lottery every day. You know, it's a kind of perverted reflection of the siddhi kami. No effort, and get whatever you want, you know. But you know, there's a study been done that most of the people who win the lottery are more miserable than before they won the lottery. It's a fact. So, you know, this is the nature of this material world. It tricks you into believing that you can game the system and somehow get happiness here. But everybody, every single person who tries that, every living entity who tries that, suffers ultimately. So, how to attain that peace. The siddhis, these are also very valuable. These are something to be coveted, isn't it? So there's a great desire for that. That's also, so you're not peaceful. Even if you get a siddhi, someone else has a greater siddhi. Isn't it? What was it, Vishwamitra Muni? Who was very, he was a powerful kshatriya at that point. That's a kind of power, that's a perfection in one sense. Big army, then he went to see, wasn't it Vasishtha Muni? Isn't it? And Vasishtha Muni, he was a simple Brahmin, you know, living in the forest with this Surabhi cow. So the Surabhi cow was giving everything he needed, giving all the milk, you know. And so Vishwamitra said, I want the cow. And Vasishtha refused. So he tried to take that cow by force. You know the story? And from that cow's different orifices came a huge army and defeated Vishwamitra and his big army. You know, he had this perfection. And so Vishwamitra was no longer happy with what he had, and he tried to become a Brahmin, he tried to become a yogi, attain so many siddhis, you know. But still he was defeated, right? When, was it Menaka came with the ankle belt? And Shakuntala was born. This is how Prabhupada puts it, you know. Well, it's obvious what happened. So he, Durvasa Muni, all of these, Sabari Muni, all these great Munis, yogis, they have so much power, so much perfection. But they haven't cleansed their heart of the ahankar, of the material desire. If you ardently desire some material thing, then you may say, well, I don't want anything else, I just want this. But the fact that you're cultivating material desire that can then go anywhere else. You see? So these great munis and yogis, they ardently desired some mystic siddhi, and then they're keeping the ahankar, they're keeping the sense of me and mine, aham and eti, together. So then it goes towards sex as well. You see? This is the way it works. So Krishna is not responsive to them. He may give you the siddhis, he may give you the heavenly planets, he may give you so many things, but he will not give you himself unless we take up the humble process of devotional service. And that is why the first principle of devotion is always humility. You read those verses in the 13th chapter about knowledge. What is the first, amanitvam, adambitvam, pridelessness, lack of deceit, lack of hypocrisy. Worshipping the spiritual master. It always begins with that. Rupa Goswami's 64 different elements in the Nectar of Devotion begins with Adau Govashriyam. Taking shelter of a guru, serving him humbly, inquiring from the guru about spiritual matters. This is always the first step. We can't take the second step or fourth step or 50th step without taking the first step. So that first step is anathema to these yogis and jnanis. They become more proud by, getting mukti and getting liberation and getting siddhis and so forth. It doesn't help. So the process must be undergone properly. So this another wonderful verse from this section, 14th chapter, because here there's a question there. Who will take to other processes of self-realization if he is actually serious about the perfection of life? Well, the conclusion of that is those who do take to other processes are not serious. If someone is serious, then they must take to this process. So Lord Brahma has a wonderful verse, again quoted very often by Prabhupada, about how foolish are those who take to other processes. Shreyak sratim bhaktum bhaktim udasyate vibho krishranti ye kevala bodha labdiye tesham aso kleshala eva shishyate nanyat dastul tushagatanim. My dear Lord, devotional service unto you is the best path for self-realization. If someone gives up that path and engages in the cultivation of speculative knowledge, he will simply undergo a troublesome process, and will not achieve his desired result. As a person who beats an empty husk of wheat cannot gain grain, one who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization. His only gain is trouble. Of course, Krishna says basically the same thing, klesho adhikaratasthe sham. That just because someone is very serious about working very hard doesn't mean that they're doing the right thing or that they're getting anywhere. If you're driving down I-5 very nicely, 70, 75, listening to your iPod and going nicely, and then you think, oh, I'm going to Laguna Beach for the festival, and then you find out, whoops, I'm going north instead of south, you went farther from your goal, isn't it? So someone who gives up the path of bhakti and works very hard, undergoes great klesha, it means distress, difficult austerities, then he may become famous. This is the problem. The innocent people, they see, oh, this person is renounced, this person is very pure, whatever, learned, he can quote so many verses. But in the heart, they've given up the process of devotion and they're simply engaged in the process of jnana and mukti. Then their ultimate gain is simply the trouble that they take. One of the symptoms of madness in the Greek mythology or in the Greek, culture is that, because, Greece is surrounded by ocean. So to see someone beating the waves of the ocean very seriously, really getting into it, What? What are they going to get from that, They may think they're going to get a fish or they're going to get whatever. The same thing, you're beating the grain husks that have already had the grain pulled out of it. They may be beating them, but there's no result. You don't get anything out of it. You get a sore arm. Maybe you build up your, strength a little bit. But there's no result. There's nothing. So this idea of working very hard in the wrong direction. This is what the material world is all about. Look at this modern society we have. You know, we recently had, of course, this is transcendental in a way, but I'll tell you a little story. So I just came from San Diego. And as you well know, of course, you also had some fires up here, but we really had fires down there. This is like millennial fire. This was worse than the fires in 2003, I think, ultimately. So many, we have a nice congregation, just as you have here. Many, you know, devotees born in India. You know, successful businessmen and so forth. So some of you may know we have one main donor. He's quite wealthy. He's helping us to build a temple there. He's also helping in Mayapur. He's going to buy the Gambira, the original Gambira, from the Jagannath, in the Jagannath temple. And that'll be part of, under the guidance of ISKCON. So in any case, he's a very nice devotee. He, and he lived in Rancho Bernardo. Rancho Bernardo is one of the hardest hit of these communities. So he has a huge house. I visited him once. I don't know how many square feet it is, but it's as practically as big as the square footage of this whole temple and more. It's huge. And he was living there alone. So he would have people come over, but he lived alone. So in the middle of the night, he's sleeping soundly, and suddenly he hears his CD player go off. Some, you know, loud bhajan, very loudly. And it's in another room, so he gets up from bed and he goes out in the room. He looks out the window, and his whole house is surrounded by flames. He said, oh, my God. So he grabs his passport and his wallet, and he runs out the door, and he was saved his life. His whole house was reduced to ashes. So he saw it as a miracle. It never happened before that the CD all of a sudden came on in the middle of the night. And somehow, you know, we can see it as Krishna's arrangement. It says, oh, this must be Krishna's desire that I live closer to the temple. He lived very far from the PB temple. Now he says he's going to get a condo maybe in La Jolla, which is just a short drive away, and do some more service. But the point I'm making is that just see, you know, this San Diego, you know, a highly coveted place to live, you know, during the big real estate bubble, houses are going up everywhere. You drive down I-5, you see, you know, developments everywhere. So great effort, great money is spent on this. People live there for, you know, for years, and they think, oh, we've got it made, you know. And suddenly, adi-daivik misery, you know, these fires. And actually, there's also a cause for it, because it's unnatural to plan all of this foliage. You know, people want to live, they don't want to live in the desert, so they plant all this foliage, which is artificial down there. And gradually it builds up into a tremendous fuel for just such a fire. And it will happen again, you know, in a few years. So, great effort, you know, toward that. A lot of money spent, aspirations, everything. And it just burned down. You know, everything, just like the fire of devastation. It was like that for a few days, you know. So this is the nature of the material world. You struggle hard. You have your aspirations. Asha, pasha, shatar, bandha. Krishna says this is the mood of the demons, being bound up by thousands and thousands of different desires. They're like ropes. You know, they bind you down, bind you here. And ultimately, you're defeated. Parabhavastavadabodajato. This Lord Rishabhdev says. As long as people do not inquire into the absolute truth, as long as they only inquire, you know, there's all these questions and answers, Prabhupada says, you know. Where is the money? What is the stock? What is the price? How can I get this? Where is it? You know, where is this? Nothing about Atma Tattva. They will be defeated birth after birth and remain bound to material body, which is what Rishabhdev is talking about in that fifth canon. So how to get out? He says, he winds up that little syllogy, if you will, syllogism in the fifth canto. Pritin yavan mai vasudeve namuchate dehi yogena tavat. Yava tavat. Until and unless one attains love for me, Vasudev, this is Rishabhadev as Vishnu, Vasudev, he says, one will not get liberation from the body. One cannot get liberation. So if you want liberation, you can't cultivate just knowledge. You must cultivate bhakti. And ultimately, the bhaktas, the wonderful thing is, liberation comes just automatically. Liberation is secondary. But it's important when we first come to devotional service, first take up even just the inquiry into self-realization, the importance of the desire for liberation. And that's why there's so much in Prabhupada's preaching and in the Bhagavad Gita about the miseries of this material world, to convince us that we cannot be happy here. That we must cultivate this understanding of the self, and God's relationship and how to develop that loving relationship. Now, in the final analysis, we don't care. Nandanam nandanam nasundadim kavitang vajagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmani shade bhavata bhakta dahoita kitri. Lord Chaitanya taught us how to preach. Not only does he say, I don't want wealth, women, followers, anything, but I don't even want liberation. Just let me be your devotee, unalloyed devotee, birth after birth. That's all I request. So that's there's a lot of things in our philosophy that seem paradoxical. Such as, in order to enjoy the ultimate happiness, one has to forget about totally one's own happiness. And simply think of Krishna's happiness, the happiness of the devotees. How can I serve Tulsi? How can I serve others? And then one finds oneself miraculously in the greatest happiness. Because that's the nature of devotional service. But as soon as one starts to think, how can I be happy? Am I really happy in devotional service? Am I enjoying? Am I feeling bhava? I don't know. You won't ever feel it that way. Because it's all I. You see? It has to be, you have to be absorbed in Krishna. I was just real, you know, sometimes when you chant your rounds, you ever have this experience where like a little light will go off, you know, there's some little realization that comes. Yeah, you have it sometimes. I was just, as I was chanting, it often happens, you know, you hear a little better. You know, chanting is like a struggle, it's a battle, you know, and with the mind to hear, chant nicely. So sometimes if the mind quiets just for a moment and you hear actually the holy name a little bit, you know, and you suddenly realize, oh, you know, just try to hear. It's all there in the holy name. Just stop the mind and hear. Concentrate on every syllable. You know, Krishna, the name, there's five letters there, you know, all individuals. You know, in other words, just the sound, just stop the mind and suddenly, you realize, oh, it's concentration on Krishna that counts, not my own ideas and whatever my mind is doing. And so there's so much in the Gita, just read carefully, about being absorbed. Ananya chetak satatam, ananya shchinta yanto mam, right? What is it? Yogin mama sarvesham madgatenantara. It's all always, always, always thinking about me. This is always the first thing. And from there, everything flows naturally. You know, the bhakti flows. Krishna is in the heart. He bestows that. You know, it's not something we have to look for separately from the process of devotional service. But, you know, I was just realizing, I was just studying, trying to get absorbed in some of the beautiful paintings of Krishna's pastimes. You know, you have so much like this murti, this beautiful diorama. You know, you can really absorb your mind in the form of Krishna, this beautiful pastime. That's why Savasprabhu took so much great effort and expense to have it here, so we can become absorbed even more in this pastime. And one thing I also wanted to mention before I end, because it's getting late, and that is, it especially holds true for all the sounds that we chant, just like this beautiful Namam Rishodam Satchidananda Rupam. I would encourage you to go to the songbook, look at all the synonyms, so that when you chant, the meaning is coming out as you're chanting. You know, Namamishram Satchidananda Rupam, Lasat Kundala. What is that? Lasat Kundala. Oh, yeah, the effulgent earrings. The picture should be there. The picture should be in your mind as you chant, and the ideas should be as you. That kind of absorption increases your experience in this. The same thing holds true for everything we sing every day. You know, the Guru Vashtaka and the prayers, you know, Shiguru Charana Padma. That is how you increase your understanding, is really by getting into the, you know, details. The details. What is that? There's something about that. God is in the details. You know, we're very much into that. Nirvishesh means no details. No details. No variety. Prabhupada called variegatedness. No variegatedness. Everything is one. But we're just the opposite. There's so many details, aren't there? There's never any end to details. You want to do deity worship? We have the advanced and we have the easy clip. Then you move to the advanced. So many more details. So these details of Krishna's form and name, qualities, pastimes, are all there to help us be more absorbed in Krishna's pastimes and Krishna himself. Any questions? Comments? Yes, Prabhu. Oh, Amala. Go ahead. Oh, we have a microphone.
You've said that we don't have to change our position, which I presume is what Varnashram Dharma is all about. But how do you do that and become fully engaged in devotional service? Sometimes being in a position is working very hard to maintain the body. So
yeah.
How do we do that?
Well, that's an important point. He says, Stani sita shuddhi gatam, tanuvan manobir. One needs to be able to dedicate one's body, mind, and words to this, you know, the service of the transcendental sound, is what he's speaking about here. If one finds an impediment, then one has to arrange with life in such a way that he can increase and gradually come to the point of doing that all the time, serving the Lord with one's body, mind, and words all the time. So, but I think the idea here is that begin with this. In other words, wherever you are now, you know, this is what we always say. You know, we don't discriminate. We say to everybody, chant Hare Krishna, Hare Bol, right? No matter who it is. You know, you may be violating all the four regulative principles. He said, oh, no, you can't chant Hare Krishna. No, that person needs to chant more than anyone, right? So the idea is that wherever you are, try to take up this process as much as possible. Now, as you advance, you may want to change your position so that you can increase it. But what Brahma's idea here is that begin with this. In other words, he's speaking especially to those who are far along, you know, on the path of thinking that I have to take sannyas, ekadandi sannyas, and go off and do this study of the Vedanta. You know, he says, that's priyas, jnane priyas, madhubhasa. Stay where you are. Better that you're, you know, a simple sweeper in the street chanting Hare Krishna than that you go off to the mountains, you know, or go off to the ashram and study Vedanta and learn all about how you're God, you know, how you're Brahman. So this is the great contrast here. Because after all, you see, the context is that Brahma himself was relying too much on his gyan. He was thinking that his gyan, four heads, he knows all the Vedas, right? He's the engineer of the universe, very smart, very intelligent. He was thinking that was greater. His position was greater than little Krishna. I mean, basically, that's the idea behind it. But he's renouncing that idea with this verse. So practically speaking, yes, sometimes we have to give up the position. And that's why we have Narada Muni at the beginning in the first canto. It says, Chak tvasva dharmam, chadanam bhajang hare, bhajanna bhakvota bhateta to yadi. It says, even if one gives up one's position, if it's preventing him from doing bhajan, and he takes up the bhajan, he takes up the process of Krishna consciousness, but he falls away, that person is in a better situation than someone who very nicely does all of his prescribed duties, but doesn't do any bhajan. Where is there any gain for him? Because he's coming around and around, and you see? So, it's not cut and dried. Sometimes it is necessary to change one's position radically. And many of us who did that in order to become Krishna conscious, try to become Krishna conscious. But there's also a truth that even in one's own home, one can do so much to simply purify one's life, continue working. Because oftentimes some radical change will so disrupt one's life that one, you know, cannot do anything properly. So one has to use his own judgment. Someone else? Yes, Amala Bhakta Prabhu.
Thank you for a wonderful class, Krishna, as usual.
You always say that.
We're all very grateful to you for coming and sharing the nectar.
Hare Krishna.
One little comment, if I may make. In the early part of your wonderful talk, you had spoken about the impersonalists and how they tend to want to just merge into the sea of light, and there's simply oneness, and that's their completeness, so to speak. You had mentioned that point. And then the difference in the bhakti path being variegated, having so many different ways in which we can connect with the Supreme Lord. So I wanted to mention one point, because the impersonalists are very they're very shrewd, and they've realized this particular point, that the human beings like to focus upon form. They enjoy that because there's a certain relish or certain pleasure, taste, which comes from focusing your attention on the form of the Lord, or his feet, or his friends, or the name, or even prayer, or in worship. So you will find many impersonalist organizations. Radhanath Maharaj, he gave a whole talk on this point. Many impersonalists, they have such a camp that you can do everything that we are doing, but, and big capital B, capital U, capital T, the ultimate goal or the ultimate motive is basically to go beyond the form and enter into the light. In other words, form is the means, and
yes,
the end is the light. And we have to be very cagey about this, because we will find impersonalists who will say, well, we do the same thing, that we're doing the same thing you, but we go one step further.
Right.
You see, ours takes you to a higher level of realization, you see. And we need to be able to understand that this is not true, and that...
This is where we have, you know, so many important statements from the Shastra. We should know, you know, Krishna's Brahmanohi Prachashtaham, you know, that I am the basis of the Brahman. You can't get around that grammatically. It's very clear. Our Ishopanishad, they like to, well, we don't, you know, we like Shrutis. Okay, Ishopanishad, Hiranmayena Patrena. You know, the prayer, the devotee there is saying, please remove your golden effulgence so I can see your form and your face of bliss. And there's so many other statements. This is why in Prabhupada's books, especially Adi Leela chapter 7 and other sections, there is so many arguments against the impersonalists, because you're right, they sometimes look just like devotees. I always like to tell this story of how when I was involved with the Ramakrishna mission way back in 72, before I, you know, became met the devotees, I was chanting Hare Krishna. I got Hare Krishna mantra from the Integral Yoga people. And I was chanting that. I don't know if I was going, maybe I started going to the temple. But anyway, I was much more involved with Ramakrishna. So, you know, I was looking around for a picture of Krishna. I couldn't find it. I just see a huge picture. They have like whole walls with Ramakrishna on it. You know, big photograph of him. But I wanted a picture of Krishna. So, because I'm chanting Hare Krishna. So, oh, we have a little murti up in the attic. You know, you can go chant there. So I've trudged up the, you know, everything in New York sometimes is very vertical, you know, up. And there's this little room, and there was one of these little ivory or fake ivory, you know, Krishna's threefold bending with a flute and everything. It was maybe a foot high on a platform. So I sat there and I chanted my couple of rounds, and then, you know, I was looking at Krishna, and then I went a little closer, and I saw there was about an inch of dust around. and it was exactly what you say, because he was also preaching this. This was the descendant of Nikalananda, who Prabhupada met. And he was saying exactly this thing. Oh, yes, yes, the bhaktas. And he was even talking about ISKCON devotees. The emotional, they need that. They need that, you know. But the highest thing is the gyan, you know. But if you need, you can do. So I went up there and I saw it. There wasn't a smidgen of devotion there. It was just like a concession for those who needed some form to meditate on. And that's why Sanatana Goswami, I don't know if he wrote this verse or quoted it, Avaishnavo mukod girnam putam hadikatam vitam shavadam naivat kartavyam sarpochishtam yatapayaha. He says, one should never hear the glorification of Hari, which by nature is very purifying. His nectar, katamritam, and his puta. Puta means purifying. Uttered by the lips of a Vaishnav, a non-devotee. Because he uses this analogy of it's just like the milk touched by the lips of a snake. So it tastes like milk, it looks like milk, it's nice and sweet, and it's nice to drink, but it's poisonous. This is the whole idea why they use that analogy. So don't be allured by all the, you know, different groups who are chanting this, chanting that, you know, doing what would, because they may very well be impersonalists. They are impersonalists. You have to have the line. You have to say, what is your motive, and what is the line you're coming into? Yeah. Get on.
No, it's just one foot motive.
One more, and then
and that is sometimes we don't know. We have to ask, what is that poison? So that poison is that I want
There's
to be the Lord
behind.
Of all I survey.
Right.
I am the Lord. I'm God. And that's the poison. And
right.
That's the underlying motive, which is pushing them forward to worship Krishna and worship Radha and Krishna, that you will let me become you.
I will enjoy Radha. I will enjoy all this stuff. Yeah. Hare Krishna. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Yeah.
Hello.